Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael here with the Faith and Freedom Show. Today I've got Craig B. Hewlett. Craig, tell us essentially what your job, besides having all this information, again, you have clients that pay you to do research so they'll know essentially what they ought to be doing with their resources. Explain your job.
That's my focus on how I earn a living. Selling books and papers and such, I'd be homeless if I had to rely on either royalties or anything like that. The American people don't read nonfiction any longer. I won't sell very many books, regardless of what the effort you and I make during this interview. I have a knack for doing research, and I'm incapable of being a Democrat or a Republican. Anybody that's a party man, I think, is misled or he's ignorant. Some of them may even be stupid. But to think that a party like, you know, the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks, the Republicans and the Democrats, have the answers in this mix of this contemporary 21st century America, you're just completely wrong. You couldn't be more wrong. We have financed all of our enemies. U.S. Western corporate interests, including our own government, has participated in trading with the enemies, from the Bolsheviks, Lenin, Russia under Stalin, Hitler. We are financing the Taliban right now while we're trying to oust them out of Afghanistan. We are, in fact, giving them 10% of the Pentagon's budget because we're hiring them to truck the goods and services that go to our military bases. And that's 10% of the Pentagon budget is being given to Hamid Karzai's cousin, who also happens to be the largest heroin trafficker with those same trucks that are trafficking in arms and water and toilet paper to our military bases and installations. When those trucks are empty, he loads them up with opium and takes it north. And we're financing all of this. We have never not financed both sides of every war because the corporate interests, especially banking interests, it's about debt. And wars create an enormous amount of debt. Bankers aren't interested in you having credit. Bankers are interested in you and your nation being in debt to them. That's the real money. That's the real power. So my job is not only do I know how to do research, and research isn't reading four books and thinking you know everything. Research, by its nature, you have to attempt to disprove your thesis, not prove it. You don't read the books where all the facts fit what you want to believe. You actually try to disprove your thesis before you issue your conclusions. And if you can disprove your thesis, you're wrong. You've got to change your thesis to start over again. I don't intend to be wrong because my clients pay me well to be right. And the first thing I started telling clients years ago and 25 years ago was get out of debt or they're going to make you get out of debt. Nobody quite understood what I meant, but Jimmy Carter, with an executive order, lifted the ceiling on interest rates in 1979. It was 18%. Now they could take your interest, you're being charged, Chase Manhattan, they could charge you 40%, and there's nothing you can do about it. But at the time, the banks weren't in a position to take the American people the way they're taking us today, because one of the flaws in their thesis was that they could pass revised bankruptcy laws early on. And that didn't happen until just 6 years ago. But once the new bankruptcy laws went into place, I just looked at my client base and I said, now you're going to see what I've been warning about.
So what was
now the banks are going to rape this country.
So what was the change in the bankruptcy law? I'm not familiar with it.
You cannot file bankruptcy and be recused of all your debts across the board and keep your home. It doesn't work that way. Now you have to, even to be allowed to file bankruptcy, you have to go to a credit group, one of the listed credit groups, to make you set up a system to pay back every nickel on your credit cards, and then they'll decide whether or not you can keep your house or will the house be sold for the equity to help pay for those credit cards. And only because of that change in bankruptcy laws, coupled with the 79 change in the ceiling on interest rates, now the banks are what we used to refer to in Vietnam Now they could do absolutely anything they want, including violate tort law. Your original contract with Chase Manhattan, that comes under tort law. Now they can violate it. What are you going to do? That's why I've started referring to what we've changed from. We've been a plutocracy and an oligarchy now for the past 50 years. We just don't know that. But now we're no longer just an oligarchy. Centralized power in the hands of a few rich people. We now have a thugocracy.
Yeah, go ahead and explain thug, T-H-U-G-ocracy.
Thugocracy. That means the people who are now that make up the oligarchy that runs our country, it's no more democratic or a free republic than I'm Afghan and Afghani. It's untrue. We haven't been a democratic system under free market, free republic principles in 50 years. What we are is an oligarchy. But the oligarchy had to remain somewhat benevolent so as never to raise the ire of the American people. Now, they don't care because they're completely in control of the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, and the White House. Obama has put more bankers in his cabinet at all levels than any other president in our history, including George W. Bush, whose family were bankers. So we've never faced the bankers having absolute control over every living soul in America. That's where we're at now.
Okay, one of the things I read, something that you had written years ago, you were forecasting that you would see the draft come back, that the Selective Service Registration has been increased, and it has increased significantly since you wrote that. You talked about globalization process continues unabated. These were kind of forecast things. Nation building taking more jobs overseas, and you explained that you would see, you know, industries, all these jobs that are going to Azerbaijan and in Iraq and things like that outside of America through this imperial, I guess, expansion. Further centralization of major industries. Think about Chrysler being given over to Fiat by Fiat. The housing bubble, and you wrote this back in 2003. Of course, it popped just a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Federal deficit heading for record highs, and as we've seen the last year, year and a half, it doesn't matter what the deficit, even at its record high, they're basically putting it in a situation where there has to be more paper money or at least credits on their Excel file on their computer, you know, more entries on their Excel file have to increase. All these things that you forecast, and you were talking about that you were going to see an increase in the military, basically the population of who's in the military to solve this economic bubble bust problem. But I'm seeing it currently as this medical martial law health care bill as being the thing that is grasping the people throughout the nation to get that resource of money to pay for the government passion. What do you think on that?
Well, you already have probably informed your audience that Social Security is busted. There is no such thing as Social Security. They pay Social Security checks and Social Security disability out of the general fund by borrowing it from other departments in the government. There is no Social Security account with revenue sitting there. It's paid for by you and I having Social Security taken out of our paychecks. But the youth in America are no longer employed at any level in our history like we used to be. They simply don't leave home. They're 32, 40 years old, and they don't leave home. Even if they've got a job, they don't pay rent, they don't pay for their own food, they don't pay sales tax because they buy almost nothing. They're in debt. And basically, a big segment of our youth in America don't function at all. And the only reason we haven't seen a full military draft is there hasn't been a Democrat in the White House. You have to think about that for a moment.
I'm thinking.
If you're a Republican in the White House, you would institute the draft, and you would have the most vicious opposition of the Democrats you could possibly imagine, and you would never be able to institute the draft. The only way they can institute the draft against the vast majority, a lottery, 18. It'll probably be 17. 17 to 43 years old. They've extended it now to 43. The only way that can happen is with a president who's a Democrat. And what better president who's a Democrat drafting young black men and women? And the draft, a new draft, will encompass women this next time around. The only reason they couldn't do it is because a Republican president would never be allowed to get away with it because of the opposition from the phony Democrats. The ideology would kick in. But with a Democrat in the White House, who's just won the Nobel Peace Prize, while putting more troops on the ground than George Bush ever did, now, if we go into Iran, or we get into a fully protracted guerrilla war in Iraq and Afghanistan, while funding the Taliban, 10% of our Pentagon budget, while building Iraq into a puppet state, belligerent to Iran, we'll have to have a draft. And by the way, there's another reason why George Bush was never interested in implementing a draft. Not just he's a Republican. 60% of all new recruits, for those of you that support the wars, those of you that wave the flag and say, I support the troops, I support the war, some of you also refuse to accept immigration. You don't want to see any more Mexicans coming to America. Well, I got a news flash for you. If you support the war, 60% of all new recruits and 60,000 of the first boots on the ground in Afghanistan and Iraq were non-U.S. citizens, mostly from Mexico.
And the explanation there is, if people didn't know it, and I read your article that you wrote explaining that, is that the federal government's regulations or the law allows for every person in America to register for the draft, whether they're registered at the border or not when they come in.
That's correct.
So one of the things that you pointed out, it actually is a door to swing open into legitimacy to stay here in America if you serve in the armed forces.
That's correct. You're promised, if you're not a citizen, whether you're legal or illegal, you go to a recruiting station and say, I'd like to join the Marines for 4 years, because the Marines tells you that if you do serve for 4 years, you'll be given U.S. citizenship. Now, listen very carefully to this. This is from the Brigadier General, Paul Chin, that testified before the House and the Senate. This is where I got the figure. 60,000 of the first boots on the ground were non-U.S. citizens, mostly from Mexico. It's an entry-level job, but less than 9,000 U.S. military personnel have ever become U.S. citizens. So in other words, they're not getting to be U.S. citizens either. The Army isn't doing that part of the bargain either. And then when you add stop loss, National Guardsmen sometimes doing 3-4 tours in these combat zones, they're using up these people because they're poor, they're black, they're Hispanic, they're Malaysian, they might be from the Ukraine. And let's just be honest, the vast majority of the American people don't give a damn if these people go to Iraq and Afghanistan and die.
Well, I disagree with you on that one, just because I know a whole lot of people. You know, and there's a point anecdotally where the people that surround me, I realize they're kind of your standard Joe. I would think that most people in America believe that, and I would say everybody I know that's joined the military forces in the last few months, there's a few that did it because they were impoverished, but I would say for the majority, it was really a noble idea of being an American patriot, serving their nation, not really understanding what this thing is in Afghanistan, of course.
Then how can you serve your nation if you don't understand what the war is about?
Well, because they've been to public school. And I've read I'm not joking about that.
We're getting in a circular argument.
No, the reason I say that, I've read the recent government book. I've gone to the textbook and I've looked at it, and all it is it laid out chaos. It didn't explain the functions of government, the frame of government, the founding of our government, really. And we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back with this. But essentially, the high schoolers I'm talking about had not a clue, really, even about the foundations of America after completing high school.